Hello, welcome to Brap Life. My name's Angel. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's really cool to have so many people listening every single week, and that number is just growing and growing. This past weekend, I went to Grinding Stone in Arizona, and it was just amazing how many people recognized me from the podcast and how many people were super stoked about the stories. So it was really, really cool. And I'm excited to see this grow and continue. There's some really amazing episodes that we have coming up, and I'm super, super stoked for each and every one of them. This is one of my favorites. Jay Jelinek is a legend in North Dakota that I had been hearing about for a couple years, and I finally was able to get him to sit down and talk to me and find out what the whole deal with the Jelinek brothers is, how many there are, what the heck Moto Climb is, because I've heard of it. I've seen some events on YouTube, but I didn't really know anything about it. So this was a really cool talk, a really great opportunity to learn about a new discipline. And it's hopefully something that I'll be checking out this year. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll see you next week. So here we are. We're now recording. So this is Brap Life. So thank you for being here. I appreciate the fact that you took time out of your busy schedule to come over and chat with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be on and look forward to talking with you.
So quick aside, you were at St. George not too long ago, correct?
Yeah, I think we just got back from a trip to St. George about a little over a week ago. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I actually might be going there this weekend because for me, it's only a 3-hour drive. So
that would be a nice drive. It was, I think, close to 20 for us. So
sounds
about
right.
I wish I was 3 hours from there because it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It seems pretty epic watching the stuff that you guys were doing. Not quite the lines that I'll be taking, but I'll be looking at it and being like, they did some gnarly stuff.
You can do it. It's just a matter of how your skill level and taking, just doing it how you can. So
yeah, my skill level.
That was too gnarly, honestly.
My skill level.
That was my first time like in the rocks and stuff too. So,
Oh really?
Yeah. I'm just nice. A flatlander, so not used to that, but I really, really, really enjoyed it. So it was fun.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. I'm pretty excited. It's going to be a little nerve-wracking with all the exposure and stuff, but it'll be really cool. So, all right, let's start at the very beginning of all of this. So how did you get started riding?
So got started riding, basically just grew up on a farm in a small town. We just always had some sort of dirt bike on the farm. They weren't very nice or new, but it was something that we just cruise around dirt roads and ditches on, basically in fields. So started doing that. And then originally from Pisac, North Dakota, there's like a longstanding tradition of hill climbers over here in Pisac, Fordville area. So me and all the brothers originally just started out as hill climbers. So that kind of led us into everything to get us, I guess, where we're at today, involved in a lot more different forms of racing.
Okay, so how many of you are there? Because I just know Jelinek brothers, and it feels like somebody's Jelinek, like, new every week is what I see.
Yeah, so there's five brothers, and then we also have three sisters. So that's all the siblings, and then there's a few other Jeliniks that ride as well. People probably get confused that are cousins. there's plenty of us. I think we're probably the most popular name in the sport of Moto Climb. So that's like our claim to fame.
That's pretty crazy. So I actually heard about the Moto Climbs before I moved to North Dakota. That was like one of the first things I ever knew about North Dakota. So when I moved there, I was like, hey, I know that there's this event happening. And I actually didn't end up making it to it when I lived there. But I thought it was really cool that I heard about it. I was living in Minnesota at the time. And then like I heard your guys' name. You was just like this name that was out there. And I was like, I didn't have any faces to put to it. So it's been kind of cool over the last year or so to kind of see you guys popping out of the woodwork and kind of put names to faces.
Yeah, for sure. Apparently, we all kind of look alike, so most people can't tell us apart. But I think I'm obviously the best looking one anyway. So,
That's funny. So how did you guys like get so involved with the moto climb? Was it just like you guys found this as something to do and now it's just your thing?
So yeah, just going back to the tradition kind of in this area, there never was any moto climbs in our state till like the early 2000s. Most of the guys would go over into Minnesota and race over there. So back in the early 2000s, they formed a club, and then they started one here in Fordville. We did that one for about 15, 16 years maybe, and then there was an opportunity to do another location with a lot bigger hill, and that's the one that's up in Walhalla called the Brick Mine now. So then we did that one for a few years, and that was a professional event, where the other one was more of a pro-am, kind of every size bike, every skill level, whereas the Walhalla is just top skill level and limited classes. So we did that for a few years, and then if you've ever heard of a guy named Austin Tyler, came over and did our events, and he brought with him Matt Musgrove. He was a filming Austin at the time. So then kind of got linked up with Matt through that, and he had this vision of starting this Moto Climb Super Series, and then kind of got on board with him with our event and part of that series, and it's just kept going and gaining traction since.
That's awesome. Matt is quite the visionary. He's kind of got his hands in a bunch of things.
Yeah, for sure. And it started out, I didn't know Matt real well to begin with. We were probably just kind of acquaintances when the series started. And I mean, got to know him really well over the last few years, and just kind of sharing his vision, I guess, as far as moto climb as a sport goes, and just has worked out well. So.
And you guys have traveled quite a bit to the hard enduros too, correct? You guys, I know you guys were at TKO, right?
Yeah, so I guess I have been to a few. Me and my brothers all raced the Billings Hard Enduro back, I guess however many years ago that was. That was our kind of first exposure experience to it. And then since I got to know Matt more, and I kind of started working with a local series here in North Dakota, got to know the scoring software and all that stuff. So Matt knew that I was familiar with it, and they needed some help with that side of things at a few events. So yeah, I've been going to a few different hard enduros to help out with that scoring side of things.
That's cool. I think it's awesome. I've been following your wife, and so I've seen like that you guys are at the events, but I always see after the fact and I'm like, oh my God, we were like right next to each other. And yet
Yeah,
we
for
just
sure,
still
and
haven't met.
it's always busy too, of course. There's different stuff going
Oh
on, so
yeah.
it's always, yeah, you just I mean, a lot of the times doing the scoring, there's not a lot going on. It's pretty can be pretty mundane and boring, but you can't just pick up and walk away, obviously,
Yeah.
and go screwing around. So it's I guess I'm there to do a job, and that's kind of how I look at it. So whatever needs to be done,
Yeah.
that's kind of my main focus, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of like media stuff at different races, so I'm always out on the course somewhere taking pictures or running around, helping, doing whatever I can. So, it's kind of the same, but it's just so funny 'cause like you guys were just at King of the Motos and I had no idea and I was like, "Oh my God, I was totally there."
Yeah, no,
So,
it is it's it, small world, especially you get into this sport. It's like kind of everybody knows everybody, and unfortunately, being part of the scoring team, I don't get to see a lot of the races when I go to them. So like I've been to these events, but haven't really seen kind of the gnarly stuff that go up, other than I guess some of the stuff at Grinding Stone. That's probably the most spectator friendly, but So that's a kind of a negative. I have to go to these places, but don't get to really see the cool stuff that goes on behind, I guess, where the main start finish area is. But at the end of the day, it's still cool to be there and be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing we always talk about on this podcast is the community. The community around Hard Enduro is just absolutely amazing. We have some of the best people, and that's been the reason why I've continued to go, even though I don't race yet. Just the people are amazing. And so I go out there and I take pictures of people to give to them, because it's just like, everybody deserves to have a picture. And so I just sit in like one spot or two spots usually, and I just take pictures of everybody. And it's really cool to just go out and cheer people on. But I don't get to see the entire course because of the fact that I'm trying to be dedicated to like one spot and make sure I get a picture of like every amateur going through that one gnarly section. So,
right.
But it's so cool though, because even just being in one or two spots, you get to meet so many people, and it's just so fun. I've absolutely loved it. And so I went to North Dakota last year for the Schmedium Enduro, and it was the same thing. Like, off-road racing in general just has the best people. I went to North Dakota and I knew Amy and Jeremy, and that was it. And then I left and I now know a bunch of people, and it was really cool. I felt really, really welcomed in, and it was awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one, like you said, the coolest things about the sport is just everybody seems like no matter where you go, you're all kind of, you're, even if you're competing, like it's not to the level that motocross and things like that, where people just hate their competitors and things like that. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And motoclimb is a lot of the same way. I mean, it's, you're competing against people, but they're willing to, for the most part, lend you some parts or things like that, or help you out, give you tips here and there. So it's, it's a neat, I'd say motoclimb and hard enduro are very similar in that aspect. And just off-road in general, whether it's cross-country, GNCC, air scrambles, whatever. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit more about motoclimb. Like, I don't really know a whole lot about it. I haven't been able to get to an event yet. I'm hoping to this year. But, like, it just seems epically scary to me.
Yeah, so I guess motoclimb, just in general, for somebody who may not have heard the term before, is basically just a rebranding of hill climb. If you Google hill climb or type it in on YouTube, like, you're probably going to get a lot of car videos and whatever else is also called hill climb. So the idea behind motoclimb was kind of a rebranding of hill climb, motorcycle hill climb, essentially. So the sport in general is just a time trial from the bottom of the hill to the top. You break a set of laser beams at the bottom, and you break it at the top if you make it over the hill, or so it's who get the fastest time or the highest distance if nobody gets it over the hill. So hills range from, here in North Dakota, we have like a 200 foot hill. They have a lot similar to 300 foot groomed hills in Minnesota. And then you get on the West Coast and it's more rough, natural terrain, longer hills. So the West Coast has a lot more natural terrain, nasty, steeper ledges, in general, probably longer hills. And that's like our hill here in Walhalla is like that. The bottom half is pretty groomed. The top half is natural terrain and rough. And then the East Coast has, similar to a lot of the Midwest, is groomed, jumpy hills that aren't as hard and technical, but they're fast and higher horsepower bikes and speeds are higher, things like that.
Okay, cool.
Similar to like more like a drag race than a rougher terrain hill, I guess.
Okay. What's your favorite one to like ride personally?
Honestly, it's probably gonna sound selfish, but like, I think Brick Mine here in North Dakota I still think it's the best hill in the country. Probably a little partial to it, obviously, because we put it on, but I've been been around a lot of places and wrote a lot of stuff, and it's tough to beat, honestly. And there's quite a few riders I think they would agree with me on that. So I got the chance to ride Pogue's Hole in New York the last year that they held it. And if you don't know what that is, you can YouTube it or whatever. But it was one of the most well-known, highly attended moto climbs in the nation. And Brickmine would be the hill that most closely resembles that. So, yeah, we're pretty lucky to have, I guess, the land and the hills that we have here in North Dakota.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So where, I guess I'm trying to think of what way to phrase this question. Where do you go to train for something like that? Like, that seems pretty hard to train for.
It can be. So a lot of places, like on the West Coast, I mean, they have hills everywhere. So anywhere with hills is always good, obviously. Here in the Midwest, it's a little tougher. Some people probably still think we don't have hills in North Dakota. That's not 100% true. We have, I mean, out in the Badlands, we have some pretty gnarly terrain. And then up in the Pembina Gorge, which is where that brick mine is. I mean, we have hills, and where the Fordville event's at, there's, I mean, basically some riverbank stuff. And so, yeah, anywhere with hills. And honestly, though, if you don't have hills, just any cross training between just moto or off-road, hair scramble, single tracks type stuff is going to prepare you almost just as well. One of the best moto climb guys, Logan Sapala, I don't think he probably practiced on a ton of hills growing up, and he's still one of the top athletes in the sport. So just having a well-rounded skill set, I think, is more important than just focusing on hills. So
okay, and what kind of bike setup does that take?
It really depends on the hill. Obviously, if you get on the groomed fast stuff, the more horsepower the better. And that can be true for the rough gnarly stuff too, but it depends on how tight and technical it is too, really. There's classes varying from 450 four strokes all the way to open CC classes where you guys are stuffing street bike engine and dirt bike frames and stuff like that. So it's really, and then you get into the amateur stuff in the Midwest, and it's little kids on 50s all the way up to 125s and CR500s and everything in between. So most events are running classes where people run an extended swing arm on the back that prevents when you're going up an incline, it helps from keeps the front end down. It's just more leverage. Okay. So that's the most common, but recently with the moto climb, we've gone to trying to promote just riding stock motorcycles, trying to appeal to manufacturers to get them more involved in the sport, and try to maybe see some change and growth in the sport that we haven't seen. So
yeah,
I hope that answers your question. I was probably maybe sort of confusing and long-winded, but
no, it makes sense, because I have seen that extended swing arm before, so I thought that was kind of like the norm, I guess. Like, I didn't realize that you could do those, like, super, I mean, I've done hill climbs, I've seen hill climbs before, but like, it's different when you're competing. I thought that would be like the standard, would be that extended swing arm.
Yeah, and it was up until basically, you'd have stock classes here and there at any given event. But up until, I think, 2 years ago, Moto Climb was the first professional series to actually host a stock class. And they opened it up to anything from a 250 four stroke all the way to a 450 four stroke. So you can ride two stroke, four stroke, whereas as previous to that, it was just 450 four strokes only. So it's kind of created an opportunity to bring more brands into the sport, give people more of an option on what they want to ride. Before it was just four strokes. Now you have the option to ride two strokes. See a lot more 300s and stuff now. You'll see a 250 two stroke here and there. I think we've seen a few four stroke 250s, but I think at the end of the day, like there's still quite a bit of resistance to, there's a lot of people that are just stuck on the extensions and kind of resistant to the stock thing. But at the end of the day, like the sport's evolved so much and the equipment's changed. And in my opinion, extensions almost end up kind of being a crutch for people. And, I don't think people realize what you can do on a stock bike if you want to or try to. And we've seen that with some of the hard enduro guys. I mean, some of the stuff they go up on a stock bike is most people probably would have thought it wasn't possible, but I mean, they show it can be done. And I think I 100% believe in it. And I think it'll actually help evolve people's skill sets and make people better riders overall if they give it a shot. So.
That's really cool. I am learning a lot. I don't, like I said, I didn't know very much about it. I knew it existed. I knew that that event happened in North Dakota. But it's cool to kind of learn about it a little bit more. So outside of the Moto Climb, do you race the full Dakota Scramble Series?
Yeah, so Moto Climb was, I mean, that was pretty much all we used to do. And then we tried that Billings Hard Enduro whenever that was. And that kind of like, we had one local hair scramble at the time. So we had been exposed to off-road single track a little bit, but just not to a real big extent. Tried the Billings Hard Enduro, and we were still all on our old CR250s at that time. We were kind of Honda team growing up in the Moto Climb stuff. And then kind of for me personally, anyway, I haven't really asked my brothers about it, but I think for them similar, we just kind of fell in love with like the off-road single track stuff. It's more technical stuff at that time. We all went and got 300s right away. And then we had an opportunity to, there had been the one long standing hair scramble. There had been a few others put on locally in Fordville by another club as well, off and on. And then there was a series previously in the state that ran for a number of years before we were in the sport. But that series ended up getting shut down, or the people who ran it just quit running it. So then the opportunity and came for us to put on an event. And then there was interest in a few other groups putting on some events. So basically created a new series for our state. I'm currently the one managing that series, I guess. And me and all the brothers basically, I guess, race everything we can to do with that. So it'd be pretty tough not to, as intertwined as we are with the series in general. So.
Yeah, you guys are kind of synonymous with dirt bikes in North Dakota, I feel like.
I guess maybe so. I don't know, but we used to do a little bit of moto and stuff too. We're not really on that side of things anymore, but I got an itch to get back into moto a little bit too. So we'll see if we can find a weekend this summer to hit up a local.
I was like, where are you gonna find time? So,
there's always well, don't ask my wife, but we'll find a weekend somewhere.
So do you ever still go over to Minnesota and race, or do you guys just do the border battle, or what do you?
Yeah. So, actually last year, and that's kind of part of managing the Dakota Scramble Series, is, got linked up with, Gary Walton, who runs the Border Battle Series over in Minnesota, basically just another cross country series, hair scrambles. And he wanted to, or kind of seeing if we were interested in doing a joint event with him. So last year was the first year we did it. We did a joint event with his series in Appleton, Minnesota. And then me and the few brothers tried to make a few of his other races as well. So that was like our first experience getting outside of North Dakota as well, on the air scramble side of things. And I mean, we're doing that again this year. So I'd like to definitely get over there a little bit more for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, that seemed like a really popular race last year. I heard about it quite a bit. It was one of the first ones for the season too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the, well, last year was called the Frostbuster. So like as soon as, I mean,
Yeah.
the snow was gone pretty much. It was the first race really. There maybe was a few more races or something before, but super early in the spring. Gets people excited after you've been kind of cooped up all winter and get back out on the bike. And yeah, it was the biggest turnout race of the series season for his series as well as ours. Obviously, we're a smaller series over here in North Dakota. We just don't got the population number of riders, but we are growing. So that's one of the coolest parts about it, though, is how early it is, and it just gives you something to get excited about when the snow melts. So.
Yeah, one of the things that I learned in North Dakota, which actually I lived in Minnesota for a long time, but I didn't really ride when I lived there for most of the time. Everyone that I knew in North Dakota that rode is so dedicated to riding that so many people would stud their tires and go out and still ride in the wintertime. And most people in Minnesota don't do that, at least none of the ones that I knew. So
Yeah, and
that's
that's
pretty cool.
kind of, I mean, we had never done that either till probably 3, 4 years ago now, when there's a local ski area up here that held a kind of a snow hare scramble race or whatever, where you had to have studded tires. So that's when we started up for the first time, and then kind of realized what we were missing out on by not doing it. We were into the snow bike stuff too, and still are, when the snow's good over here. Snow bikes are always better in the mountains than they are here in the flatland. But yeah, when snow conditions are right, you can have just as much fun started up as you can on regular tires, honestly. So,
What do you think the coldest temperature is that you've ever ridden in?
we've ridden in like some single digit below zero stuff, I want to say for sure, but that's, I mean, probably about as cold as you'd want to. And that's probably more on snow bikes. I think studded up on bikes, typically in the maybe teens or single digits would be about as cold as I'd want to go, I guess. So it kind of takes the fun out of it. You get much colder than that. So
How do you stay warm?
it's not as bad as you think. I mean, if you dress for it and you wear a face mask and helmet or whatever and warm
I was
gloves, I
just
mean,
thinking about
it's.
my hands.
And you think as much like as work. Much work as it is riding and just physical
That's
activity.
true.
I mean, that all helps keep your body warm and stuff too. Instead of you think about it in the summer, like you're dripping sweat, so you're keeping your body warm that way. So
That's true. That's true.
if your hands get
Yeah,
cold, you always
I
got the exhaust to warm them back up is the
knew.
quickest, best way.
That's
So
a really good point. Yeah. When I picked up my bike, so I bought my 300 at Full Throttle last January, and I was so sad because they were like, "You probably shouldn't take it home today," because that was when it was like negative 67 or something like that outside, and it was way too cold. And when I finally picked up the bike, everybody down here in Arizona laughs, and they're like, "Excuse me, what did you just say?" But I'm like, "It warmed up and it was negative 5." So I went and I picked up the bike finally, and they're like, "It warmed up." And I was like, "Dude, that is such a huge difference. Like, you don't even understand. Like, negative 67, negative 5, like, it's huge. It almost feels warm. Almost. Not quite, but almost."
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy. So when we went to St. George here a couple weeks ago, it was negative 30 real temp when we left Bismarck. So it would have been colder than that with wind chill. And then I mean, riding in 60, 70 degrees felt pretty good. So
That's a
yeah,
huge temperature jump.
it's pretty crazy. But now we finally warmed back up. So we've been in the 30s and 40s, 50 actually, I think we hit here recently. So
Wow. So did you
yeah.
guys get that huge snowstorm? I know Minnesota just got dumped on with snow.
No, actually, like where we're located at right here, we're kind of surrounded by most places have snow, but we have no snow at the moment. It all melted, and we didn't get that storm that came through either. So we've been pretty lucky.
Wow.
It's been super cold this year here, but we've avoided most of the snow. We've had a few snowstorms, but not even enough to even really ride snow bikes or snowmobiles or anything like that. So it's been actually a perfect winter for studded tires if it wasn't so dang cold. So
yeah, that North Dakota cold. I mean, like I said, I lived in Minnesota for a long time. It was probably like 15 years total. And living in North Dakota was a completely different experience. It was just so much colder. And I don't know if it's because there's less trees or what. It was always so windy and so cold.
Yeah, I think that's the trees are the big part of it. Like Minnesota has all the trees and evergreens, which draws in heat. And then I think something about like where like Grand Forks and Fargo are located geographically, I want to say there's some like weird thing with that, but it makes it, I think it's actually colder here most of the time than it is in a lot of parts of Canada, just due to the way meteorology and all that stuff works with locations.
Yeah. So
that's probably not the right terms, yeah. But I think you get the gist. So.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with like where the jet stream goes or something like that. I remember hearing about that, but I was out in Minot, so it was the coldest I'd ever been, and I was not a fan of it. But I loved North Dakota. I just didn't love the cold.
The cold isn't awesome. And even it seems like we always like in the summer, then we get super humid. So there's always something to complain about, and it's super windy all the time, being we don't have a lot of trees and things too. So it's not always awesome, but there's definitely positives to living here as well. And I think that's why a lot of people just kind of stick it out through the crap, is just because it's not all bad either. So keeps riffraff out, is what they say. So yeah,
I was gonna say it was very peaceful being there. I loved, like, I could go out on the trail and I'd have the trail to myself, whether it was riding or running. It was really, really peaceful, and it was really cool. Whereas then you go to like Minnesota has all the health nuts, and it's like you go out on a trail in Minnesota and you run into like 150 people, and I'd be like, no, I want to go back to North Dakota.
Right, for sure. Yeah, it's nice to kind of have your space and your freedom. And I think we probably take that for granted a little bit over here, just forget how good we got it, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember thinking North Dakota was humid. And then this last summer, I was in Maine for the whole summer. And I was like, I never knew humidity until I moved there. It was like 90 degrees with 90 some percent humidity. And it was just the absolute worst thing I've ever had to deal with. I was like, I'll go back to North Dakota.
Yeah, right. The humid stuff really sucks, but yeah, we're obviously not as bad at some places, but
the one thing that North Dakota has though that like the East Coast didn't, except Brushy Mountain in North Carolina, is that North Dakota has clay, and that when it rains on a bike is ridiculous.
Like, yeah, I mean, we do got good dirt here for sure. We got clay and I mean, a lot of black dirt here in the Red River Valley and sand. I mean, we got a little bit of everything almost across the whole state. It's a pretty wide range of conditions for sure. But yeah, clay is pretty plentiful here. So,
yeah. So where, if you could go anywhere in the U.S. to ride, so you just went to St. George. Is there anywhere else that you have kind of on your bucket list to get out and ride?
I'm going down to the Grinding Stone here to help with scoring in a couple weeks as well. Mm-hmm. Actually gonna drive down and bring a bike with, so I'm not gonna be racing obviously, but I'm gonna try get some seat time on the Sandstone and Page. I've always wanted to see what that's all about after watching all the videos and stuff, so kind of get to live that out pretty shortly. And then the plan is to race the Moab Hard Enduro for myself. Nice. So I'm going to try to get some seat time over in Moab as well. So that would be another one on the bucket list. Outside of that, I mean, there's probably plenty. I've heard Idaho is really good. I'd like to get over there at some point. Ridden a few places in Montana. But those would be the first ones that kind of come to mind. Yeah.
That's
Need to hit some good
awesome.
sand dunes somewhere as well someday. That would be another bucket list item. Just find some. We did hit the dunes once, but it was like too early in the year, so there was still snow under a lot of the sand, and you couldn't tell where it was, so it was like kind of a little bit sketchy to ride on. So,
Oh, jeez. Where was that at?
it was in Idaho. I want to say, is it St. Anthony? The dunes there. Yeah, it
Okay.
was like, so we combined like a snow bike trip with a dirt riding trip, and it was just too early in the spring, and we're the only ones out there. So like obviously the locals and stuff knew that, but just some rednecks from North Dakota didn't have any idea. So, but it was still fun. It was you kind of got to learn to read the sand a little bit, like where the snow was and stuff, but it was like your front end would drop in here and there when the snow would be under the stand. So it was a little bit sketchy, but we got through it. Nobody got hurt or nothing like that. So I think your
That's
bike is fine.
crazy. Yeah. Okay, so then the next question is, anywhere in the world, if you could go all expenses paid, where would you pick to ride anywhere in the world?
That's a good question. I never really thought about that, honestly. I'm gonna just go out on a limb and say Sweden. My wife loves it in Sweden. So I don't know, just due to that, I think it would be cool. And they have like one of the biggest, I think, races in the world there. It's like the Gotland Enduro or something. I was doing a little bit of research on
Okay.
it. I actually kind of was trying to figure out a way to find a bike over there to do a race over there. So
Really?
I guess just pulling something out of my hat, that's what I'd say. So
That's
probably not
interesting. That's
like
the first time.
most people's first choice, but I think it'd be cool. So something different, unique, and fun to try. So
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really cool. I never really thought about riding in Sweden. That's awesome. I'm gonna have to look up that enduro and see what it is that you're talking about because I haven't heard of
yeah,
that.
it's not like a hard enduro. It's just a regular enduro, I believe. But they do have a lot of cool rocky terrain over there and stuff too. So I feel like the terrain would just be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking at a job in Sweden for a while and I was like, I wonder what the riding is like. But then I was like, do I really want to move across the world right now?
Yeah, right. It'll be tough for sure, but maybe someday. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so then going back to real life back here in the States, what does like off the bike training look like for moto climb? So like is there like a set of exercises or something that you could do to prepare yourself, like your body for that kind of racing?
I would say honestly, anything that you can do for any of the other disciplines would transfer. There's nothing, I guess, that I'm aware of or I've done specific to mortal climb that would be really advantageous. Other than, I mean, just on the bike training, honestly. I think the sport in general, kind of gets maybe a bad rap, or maybe a lot of the people look at it as a positive, is you don't maybe have to do off the bike as much off the bike training as you do in some of the other disciplines to be competitive, just because the runs are so short. Whereas physical fitness and conditioning still can be important, but it's not maybe going to play as big of a role as it would in a 2 hour hair scramble or 3 hour hard enduro, or even I mean 30-minute motocross race. Like just the longest ride up a hill. There's an event in Utah, and all the times are still under a minute, but most events are between 7, 8 seconds to like 25, 30 seconds max. So I would say like 10 seconds is an average pass on a hill climb hill. So like 10 seconds, do you really need to be super physically fit and in shape? Probably not. You could smoke a couple cigarettes and go and be fine, unfortunately. So And I'm sure that's been done. So that's can be a little bit of have a little bit of that redneck sport mentality, but that's kind of like what Moto Climb is trying to kind of break through that barrier and show that there is talent and skills in the sport as well. It's not 100% redneck. So that, I mean, that's just like that was just kind of a funny example, but
yeah.
Obviously, there's still value in having a skill set and being physically fit for sure, but nothing specific. Yeah. No.
Okay. Interesting. So what about for you specifically? So you do hair scrambles, you do moto climbs, you're doing hard enduro. What do you do for your training?
Well, I haven't done as much as I would have liked in the last, few years. You're going to make me spill my secret now, but so I've honestly just been trying to put, well, I'm just going to hold an edge over a few of my competitors here, for the local series, but, just been trying to like, I've struggled a lot with arm pumps. So, mm-hmm. haven't done as much off the bike training as I would have liked. Just life gets busy and, managing the series, putting on and promoting events and trying to race and be competitive, being self-employed. I got a few different side gigs, things like that. Like it all adds up and takes a lot of time. So, haven't done as much training as I want, but I've really been trying to focus on that and do it daily. And mostly just been trying to bike and run and just get my, basically endurance better is kind of my main focus now. So hopefully if I can get rid of the arm pump, that'll maybe be a lot more competitive than I have been the last few years. Not that I haven't been competitive, but I haven't been, I guess, winning or competing for wins. Typically I'm like a third, fourth place, maybe second on a good day. So, we're trying to do better than that this year. So we'll see.
You want that top spot, huh?
Yeah. My little brother's got me the last few times, and losing the little brother's never good. So, but he's got kind of a dad bod going on, and he's got two kids with another on the way. So, I think I got him covered this year.
I'll be excited to see that. I'll definitely have to watch.
Yeah. It's always fun too. Like, North Dakota's small with a pretty limited number of riders. And that's what the focus is kind of on, growing the sport and getting more people in the sport. But, mm-hmm. no matter what, like with the brothers that race, there's, and we're all similar skill sets. So there's always somebody to race or compete against no matter what. And, all the smack talk and stuff back and forth is always fun. And, started to build some pretty good camaraderie with other competing riders and stuff as well. So it just makes it more fun overall versus just, you want to take it serious, but you want to have fun at the end of the day too. So it kind of just makes it a little less serious, I guess. And, you can lose and not be so bent out of shape about it.
Unless it's your brother.
Well, I mean, you are competitive, but at the end of the day, like if I don't win, I guess I don't want my brother to win typically. So that's like kind of how it's kind of like bittersweet almost. I'll never tell them that to their face, but they'll probably listen to this podcast, I'm assuming. So
now they know.
Yeah. That's funny. I am happy if a brother beats me and they do well. I'm still happy for them, but pissed at myself, I guess we'll put it that way.
I get that. Totally understandable. So along with like the training aspect of it, do you really focus on nutrition at all? Or is it kind of just like whatever is put in front of you, you eat?
So I'm trying to get better with the nutrition. My wife is kind of big into eating good and all that stuff. And typically, I've just always ate whatever was in front of me and drink a lot of energy drinks, stuff like that. Oh, just geez. So trying to kick a few habits like that, be a little more mindful of it for sure. So yeah, that's diet and physical fitness is, that's like my 2025 goal, I guess. And I'm starting out pretty solid so far, and we'll see how long we can carry it through. Once we get to the summer, that'll be the true test. That's when things obviously start getting busier with everything going on and stuff. So if I can stay dedicated to getting in the gym or getting in and out and running and just doing on the bike training enough too. Don't do enough of that. It's just tough to, I guess, make the time just with all the other stuff that life's got going on. So got to make it a priority, I guess, and try to continue improving.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, I noticed a huge difference in my riding and my endurance in general when I started changing the way that I ate. Just fueling your body properly makes such a huge difference. I had an energy drink addiction because I was driving across the country all the time. I drove across the country 5 times last year. Yeah, 5 times. And so I was like kind of addicted to energy drinks to kind of keep me awake and keep me going, because I would have my bike on the back of my vehicle, so I wouldn't like to stop anywhere. Sleeping in my car with my bike on the back is sketchy when you're anywhere that's remotely close to a big city. So it was a lot of energy drinks. So I've since kicked that habit, and I feel a lot better. So that's good. But I have found that for me personally, an increase in protein really helped in balancing out like my carbs, because I used to be a carboholic. I used to just love to eat like a box of pasta was my favorite. And I mean, I was running enough to, you know, when you run 20 plus miles at a time, that's, you can eat a box of pasta. It's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
But I found that balance actually does a lot better, because while I was having enough carbs to get through a run, then I was still like pasta, at least the kind that I was eating is, you know, simple carbs and it goes through your body pretty quick. So focusing on more complex carbs and things like that. So I always like to know how other people eat, like especially when they're competing in these different disciplines and stuff like that. And anyone who does hard enduro, I'm like, what are you eating? Like, what does it look like, what your training is? Because that's what I'm going to start doing this year. My first race is going to be Battle of the Goats in North Carolina. So like I'm training for that right now. So any little tidbit, I'm always like super excited to hear what people have to say.
Yeah. And I'm not the best person for that. I still eat just kind of a mix of whatever's in front of me. Plus some, I mean, try to be mindful of it, but, I'm kind of like a big carb guy too. Got a pretty good metabolism, so I can shovel in quite a bit of food and not really gain a lot of weight or have to worry about it too much. So I get kind of spoiled in that regard. But we eat a lot of like wild game and stuff too. It's more lean organic type stuff. We like to hunt as well, so eat a lot of deer meat, stuff like that. But beyond that, like, yeah, just fruits and vegetables. I mean, I personally just keep it simple and don't overthink it too much, where I think sometimes people maybe do overthink it and that sort of thing. So maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, just simple. And if it's natural, organic, like putting in your body shouldn't be that. I mean, the more processed foods you can avoid, obviously, the better. But anything outside of that, like, really at the end of the day, I don't think it can be that bad, and especially in moderation. So
yeah for sure. I love it. Cool. Well,
I've been drinking a lot of Hydropower. It's, I don't know if you've heard of them or not. Sports supplement, electrolyte drink or whatever. But that I think they're coming out with like a daily drink mix sometime soon, but it's like a basically endurance fuel with carbs and electrolytes in it for when you're riding and stuff like that. So I've been drinking a lot of that. I've tried to kind of substitute when I would have drank energy drinks before with Hydropower, or just any just straight water, things like that. So it's, that's been a pretty good change for me as well. So
yeah, energy drinks scare me. I know somebody who had some pretty severe heart palpitations because he was drinking like 6 of them a day. I was like, that's so much caffeine. But some people do it, and
yeah, that just can't be too good for you. But no. Yeah, like some people do it and they're surviving. So
yeah, I mean, every body is different. Like what you eat and what works best for you versus what I eat, what works best for me, even if we're competing in very similar things, I mean, our bodies are going to metabolize everything completely differently. So, like I said, it's just always interesting to see kind of a peek into people's lives and like how they eat, how they train, all of that stuff. I think it's really interesting. So, and it was really funny that you said that your brother has a dad bod, because I was just like, like, what is his?
He's got like his diet look like. Got going on. In his like daily routine, he's in the ag business for his job, so does a lot of driving around in a pickup from area to area, field to field, or in the office type stuff. Maybe not quite as active as some of the stuff I do, but definitely probably just not as mindful of what he's eating, or just hasn't taking the initiative to start working out and keep himself in check. So we'll see if this jump starts him or not.
Just called out on the podcast.
I think they all probably kind of got dad bods a little bit, honestly. So even the one that's not a dad. There's two that aren't dads, actually, but yeah, so
it's the trend. They're just trying to be trendy. It's no big deal.
But now if I lose, that's gonna be really bad, so kind of leaves no option.
They're gonna try that much harder. Yeah. That's great. Okay, then I think the last thing that I have for you is, if you could give anyone who's starting out in dirt bikes in general any advice, what would be your best advice for them?
Just always to keep it fun, no matter what. If it's not fun at the end of the day, that's why you should be doing it, or why I guess I can't think of another reason why you'd want to. I mean, with the risks and stuff involved, if it's not fun, if it's not improving your quality of life, then I guess maybe you should reevaluate while you're doing it. So always keep it fun. And if you're looking at progressing and getting better, like, you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone and push the limits a little bit. I know just a handful of people that they aren't really willing to do that. And you never really progress. So, and not everybody is looking to, so that's fine. But that would just be if you are looking to progress, I mean, you have to get outside your comfort zone and push the limits, and you probably will get bit a time or two. But yeah, if you're not willing to do that, then you better be just content to just, I guess, do it as a hobby, or not concerned with the results in racing and stuff like that. And there's a large amount of people that do that, obviously. So, but me as a, with the brothers and being a competitive person, like, I'm always striving to improve, and I want to get better and faster, no matter how old I get. I'm 34 now, but I want to be the old guy who's 60 that's throwing down with the 20 and 30 year olds in the double A class, and hair scrambles is my goal. So we'll see if I can make that a reality.
That'd be awesome. All right. And then, so I guess this is a three-part question, because it's a little bit different usually. So the next question is, for somebody who's going into hard enduro, what would be your best advice for them?
Honestly, I haven't done enough of it to probably have real good advice yet, but like just being patient, or not worrying too much about and just being willing to try no matter how gnarly it is, like just knowing your limits a little bit, but also how you can push. And that kind of gets back to the point, you have to be willing, I'd say hard and durable, like at a certain point, you're going to have to commit to something you're probably scared of to figure out if you can do it or not. But staying within your limits when you're doing that and not exposing yourself too much to put yourself in a dangerous or potentially hazardous situation. I guess that's all I would say. Just me being fairly limited yet in how much I've ridden. I mean, here in North Dakota, we don't have a lot of places to practice hard enduro. So really the extent of my experience is going to the races, helping with scoring, seeing some of the stuff. We raced the Billings hard enduro, which was super unique and different from all the other hard enduros. It was more of like a modal climb race almost, because it was just up and down hill. So it was like, we felt comfortable in that scenario. Whereas being out in St. George and riding a lot of that stuff, which is more similar to a typical West hard enduro. I mean, definitely didn't feel super comfortable on some of the stuff and had never really ridden rocks before and things, but started to feel pretty comfortable right away. And just, I relied on, I mean, the skill set that I'm confident in to do the things that I thought I could. And there's a few things I didn't do that I wish I would have now looking back, but then it's kind of like a goal next time we get out there to do some of that stuff too. So yeah, pretty limited hard enduro experience. Going to get up and do some more, like I said, but just knowing your limits and being patient and pushing through it, I think would be good advice. Awesome. Not getting too discouraged if you can't do something right away, or got to pick your bike up a couple times, or push your bike instead of riding through something. Like, just don't worry about it too much, and in time it'll come. So,
yeah, definitely. I love that. I feel like you watched my video from the other day, my epic video. I went through a section and I crashed really hard because I whiskey throttled going through a rock section, and then the next section that I came to was another big rocky drop, and I walked my bike through it essentially because I was like, I'm not doing that again because that hurt.
Yeah, no, I think I did see that actually, but I mean, that's, yeah, essentially like, and I mean, but at some point you're going to have to get over that fear if you want to keep progressing too. And maybe next time you fall and you will ride instead of and push, but in the meantime, it's progression can be slow too. It doesn't have to be super quick. So.
Yeah. And that was my second gnarly fall that day. My first gnarly fall, I will not be posting because I sound absolutely terrified as you see basically the sky, because I fell off of the single track and it was only like a 6-foot fall, but still it was a decent fall. And I'm like freaking out and I'm just looking at the sky and you just see my legs and then the bike is like sitting right above me. And it's pretty scary looking. It wasn't actually that scary in real life because like it happened so quickly that I didn't really know what was happening. So I didn't even realize I made a noise. But yeah, the footage is just, it sounds really horrible. So, didn't post that one, but the whiskey throttle was pretty epic looking and that one was fine. So, but yeah, it was a learning experience. And I try and learn a little bit of something from every time that I ride. My progression has been pretty quick and I push myself quite a bit to learn, but I'm really dedicated and I'm on the bike like 5 to 6 days a week. So my progression's faster than a lot of people's.
For sure. Yeah. And if you're able to get that many days on the bike, I mean, that's a big help, and stringing it together like that. I mean, makes it a lot easier too than one day here and one day there, and just muscle memory and things like that just aren't going to come back to you either. So I mean, it'll come with time still, but yeah, the more days you can string together like that, I think that's definitely a huge benefit for sure. And yeah, being willing to try again. If you fall down, so what? You got to get back up and try it again. Kind of a must-have mentality, I would say, for hard enduro.
Yeah, definitely. So then what's your best advice if you could give somebody like 10 seconds of advice for moto climb and getting into that?
Just get ready to, I guess, depending on what level you're at, if you're just getting in the sport young, I mean, just keep it fun and try your best. But if you're jumping in, you got a good skill set, just, I mean, get ready to send it and hang it out. And the more horsepower, the better, essentially. So
All
that's
right.
pretty much moto climb in a nutshell there. So yeah.
I love it. Love it. Cool. Well, this is now your time for any shout outs, thank yous, anything like that.
Yeah, so I guess just like to thank everybody that supports kind of our local series and stuff here. Full Throttles Motorsports is a big one. B&B Insulation, Nelson Farms, very gracious for their support. Anybody that supports the Eagle Ridge Motorcycle Club and our Moto Climbs, appreciate that as well. There's honestly too many there to name. But it all helps. We wouldn't be able to do the events without any of the sponsor support. Yeah, just I guess my wife for following me kind of around, let me kind of pursue my passion to a limited extent. Do some of the things I love to do, putting up with the North Dakota winters, and just the rest of my family for all the support, and brothers for going racing and having fun and getting in fights, but still having a good time. All is you kind of look back and what else would we do? So yeah, I guess those would be the main ones. And if I left anybody out, I guess I apologize. But
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. I know you're super busy, so I will let you get back to it, but I really appreciate your time. It was really cool to talk to you, and I guess I'll see you at Grinding Stone.
yeah, sounds good. I look forward to it, and thanks for having me on. It was fun chatting and getting to I guess adventurous a little bit. Getting excited for the upcoming weeks. So
Heck yes. Awesome. Well, thank you again, and we'll talk to you later.
take care.
All right. Bye.